we're looking at guiding and informing all policy and development work across government. For example, we're looking at the relationship of integrated development plans with special development frameworks in municipalities. We're looking at the relationship between integrated development plans and provincial cross development strategies at provincial schools, and so on. And then the second bullet point talks about the output and the development of sector planning. So we're looking at the relationship of IDPs and sector plans, and so on. And then some of the key projects that are being done in the integrated development planning component are related to work on township economies. I've spoken about issuing some kind of guidelines and practice notes on IDPs, looking at the review of the municipal planning performance management legislation, and so on, and then building geomatic capability. So this is really what we're talking about GIS. But that's the essence of that group of work within this particular program. I will now start to zoom in, Chairperson, a little bit into issues of urban development within the context of IEDF. And this slide is really trying to orientate us or set the scene on what is the rationale or the logic that informs the work that we're doing and the component of the integrated urban development framework. Essentially, what we are learning is the fact that, or the reality that, and this is based on a lot of research that has been done previously, and this is to say that Africa will be the fastest urbanizing region between 2020 and 2060, which means within the entire continent, there's a lot of people moving into our urban states and cities and towns from residents. And what the implications of that is that people are projecting that by 2050, the world's urban population will be concentrated essentially Africa and Asia, so Africa to 21%. In fact, the latest stats from the UN Habitat is beginning to say that by 2030, there will be about 40 megacities in most developing regions. What that means is that Africa and so on will be part of the one of these regions that actually will see the development of a lot of these mega cities, which means our urban spaces and urban centers are very, very important for us as a country, as South Africa. And it's important how we respond to these developments that is coming the next year. And this slide is taken from the discussions where that were taking place at the United Nations Habitat earlier this year. If that's the global story of urbanization, how does it affect South Africa? What are the specifics of South Africa? Research is telling us that we are not different. The trend in South Africa is very similar to the trend globally in terms of urbanization. So much so that as we sit, and I think that amount has increased because the Statistician General was presenting yesterday, and he was saying that it's no longer 63% of South Africans living in urban areas. That number has increased to 66%. So as we said, 66% of South Africans already live in urban areas, which means that our urban spaces and our cities and towns are very, very important to South Africa. We need to actually appreciate the implications of the fact that people are actually living, more and more people are continuing to live in our urban spaces. The projection is that this number will rise to 71% by 2030. And there is also, the SG confirmed yesterday, that the trend of people moving to urban cities and spaces is increasing, it's not slowing down. And research also is indicating that by 2030 we'll be looking at 71% of that. But what's more interesting is that by 2050, 8 out of 10 South Africans will be living in urban areas. So once again, there are implications here to all sorts of things in terms of how we plan, how we basically support cities and municipalities on how to respond to the issues of urbanization. And the point that we're also trying to make here is that we should actually see this trend of urbanization in South Africa as a positive and see how we can actually benefit from it by instead of trying to constrain or try to deny the reality. In other words, we should find how and see how we can benefit from the urban dividend that comes as a consequence of this urbanization trend. These next couple of slides, chapters and members, just try to bring it up. The idea is just to try and to bring that supposedly high-level space and theory to give it some kind of an image and a picture to itself. I don't know how many of us have seen the Time magazine that actually had the front cover of literally the dichotomy in our spaces in South Africa, where right next to a very wealthy suburb where you find a very dense informal settlement where there's no services, there's a lot of poverty. This is pretty much the image that the world is beginning to have about our South African spaces throughout. So much so, Jefferson, that we learned, there are some researchers who are taking these images and using them to talk about South Africa everywhere else. I mean, this particular researcher was using these images to the gallery somewhere in Germany where they would just be projecting the dichotomy of our urban spaces between regions across the country, essentially. They'd be like a gallery set up, and then there would be these images that just basically showcases what's happening in the country. And the concern for us is surely this is not the story that we want the world to see or to appreciate about South Africa, because it's just not the right story that we want to be communicated outside. But it is a reality. This is another image that basically tells the same story about spatial inequality, spatial segregation, and wherever we live. It's an image that I'm trying to say. And essentially, as we deal and respond to urbanization, these are realities that our cities are confronted with. And therefore, we are saying through our urban work, urban policy work, we must literally as government do something to actually respond to urbanization and henceforth agree on how to tackle this and these images that show or the trend of spatial inequality in our cities. Now I'm just going to move over to the second section, where I'm going to talk about an overview of what our integrated urban development framework is about. Chapterson, I thought I should maybe just go back a little bit to give you an instance of how we arrived at the development of the IDF. Essentially, the IDF is South Africa's national urban policy. And this is similar, a lot of other countries across the world have developed a national urban policy, and we also have one. The process started in 2012, and it culminated in cabinet approving our national urban policy, which is what the program called the IGF, in April 2016. There was a lot of consultation process with cabinet and discussion documents and research, as you say, for the entire period from 2012 until we got to a point where we can say, as a country, as South Africa, we have a national urban policy, which was adopted by cabinet. So we actually, there's no confusion about what South Africa's position is. And as far as urban, what we're saying on urban policy, because there is, we have, I think, the guidance for the similar idea. What I didn't, there's a slide and Jefferson that actually shows the relationship of our national urban policy with other global policies. For instance, what is called the New Urban Agenda, the Africa 2063, and so on. So our national urban policy is not only in what focuses, but it's a structure of cabinet actions. We actually are very much in line with what the global, the new urban agenda, which is done by the UN Habitat, says on what South Africa must, on how South Africa must respond to urbanization. So there is a very nice relationship. In fact, our national urban policy informs how the new urban agenda was developed in Ecuador, to say this is an issue that we must deal with. We try, Chairperson and honorable members, to capture the essence of our national urban policy with this slide, simply because it articulates the vision that our national urban policy is trying to achieve. And if you'll indulge me, Chairperson, I'm going to read it simply because I believe it's a very powerful vision. It actually talks about the attainment of livable, safe, resource-efficient cities and towns that are socially integrated, economically inclusive, and geographically competitive, where residents actively participate in urban life. it actually paints a picture of the types of urban areas that we actually would like to see. And for me, what is absolutely amazing about this vision is it recognizes the importance of active or community participation in these kind of cities and towns that we actually want to see in the future. It's not the type of vision that is only looking at government and so on. It talks about the importance of the bottom-up or citizens and communities to help us realize, make this vision a reality. The idea essentially is embedded on four strategic goals. And these strategic goals talk about inclusion and access and people's growth, effective governance, and social integration. And then we have nine policy levers. I'm going to unpack the policy levers because they become a very important book for Chatterton and Orville member for us on how do we make our national urban policy reality. Which they start to unpack on how do we work backwards in terms of making that vision a reality and how do we slowly work towards achieving those strategic goals. That's why it's just to emphasize the importance of one of the key defining features of our national urban policy, which is spatial transformation, if you recall the images that I've spoken to earlier, and the importance of how we actually look at the structuring elements of our spaces on the basis of how we deal with issues of land, transport, housing, and jobs. How these elements are very important when we actually try to respond to the spatial and challenges and so on. I'm quickly going to fly through these, and these are the quality levers of the idea. Chatterton, the reason why I'm raising this quality levers is because they begin to take us from that high level vision and goals to something that is much more practical and something that helps us in terms of what is it that we as government, the private sector, and everybody else is doing. For instance, policy lever one talks about integrated urban planning and management. Here, one of the most important things that we need to do as government and together with partners, which are the private sector communities, is to talk about how we're going to make sure there is alignment between. I think I'm going to put. The first key priority talks about aligning our spatial and sector and strategic plans. And the argument, why this is important, and Chatterton and honorable members, is that if we don't design processes of how right up front make sure that there is a relationship, a positive relationship between how we do our spatial plans, our sector plans, and strategic plans, it becomes much more difficult for us to try and achieve that at the tail end of the process. So essentially, as we work as government and so on, we need to design processes that allow us to have discussions on how we begin to align these processes. And this applies, it doesn't matter whether it's national, whether it's provincial, whether it's municipality and so on. It's the entire, it's the whole of government literally getting its act together. To say, how do we plan together as government? How do we understand what we're doing? How do we link the work that we do? I'm sure Chatterton and other members, there's a lot of effort in the system that tries to do this kind of action and bring these things together. In fact, the work that we're doing in the district coordination model is starting to say, how do we begin to get an appreciation of what it is that government is doing in a district? What are they doing? How much is it costing? Where is it happening in the space? How is it linked to a different sector and so on, so that we can appreciate government investment in a particular district. We've already almost started to implement the idea. I'm not going to read all of these actions in the policy, but I'll just highlight some of the interesting ones. And there's a lot of work on integrated transport and mobility that we need to look at. Some of it has to do with, I think the most interesting one is the one that talks about making cities pedestrian and cycling safe, which means that we need SDGs either through our integrated transport plans, how we design our layouts. We need to make sure that we provide our cities rather, a design layout that allows us to walk trains without getting worried with the fire when we walk in. So, and here, the point is, and the idea of justice is to give us direction on what are the simple issues that we need to actually implement. For instance, Diva 3, for instance, talks about integrated sustainable human supplements. I'm going to just highlight one very important one that talks about the redevelopment of culture. I know that this is a very important part for governments, the president and so on. The question, the trick here becomes just how do we implement this intervention of the political ideas collectively? Because the risk here is to start doing this in an uncoordinated
Calibri,
manner,
I think.
To have one government department taking an initiative and another one taking an initiative, and that will be dilute the impact. There's no question how to be actually redevelop
our
country. And what does it mean? What the redevelopment of countries mean? But essentially, our NATO and this is what is important that we need to do. Who do we partner with when we redevelop?
You guys must organize different groups. Mention the toilets.
And what I spoke about in this session, some of these aspects in this policy have been started to be in very in the Department of Corporate Governance, or through some of our partners, for instance, it could be the Swedish Network, National Treasury, that are indicated who those partners are in the leadership on. In policy level 4, session, we're talking about the integrated urban infrastructure. Here, what has become very, very important for us is to start talking about how to consolidate and coordinate infrastructure funding. And the problem statement is something that says there's a lot of infrastructure grants across the Indian government. And how those infrastructure grants get realized in future. It does not always help us to achieve what are the objectives of digital transformation. So we think, unfortunately, at the moment, we're in discussions with the Australian state, how do we start a discussion on consolidating this fund so that when they arrive in our citizen house, they actually do so in a way that helps us to achieve the ultimate goal of digital transformation and so that cities can actually benefit in a much more coherent way. Then, the other aspect in this policy we talked about the institutionalization of municipal long-term infrastructure plans. In specific terms, in the intermediate city program, and I think I can say in the work that the city support program is doing, we started to introduce what we call a capital expenditure framework, which are our interpretation of long-term infrastructure plans. We have more or less 11 intermediate cities that have started to do these long-term infrastructure plans, and I'll share a little bit about what we've done for the government. I'm going to move over to other policy levers. We talked about effective land governance and management, and here we're talking about the importance of strengthening land use planning and management. In terms of realizing this intervention of this policy lever, we've been working quite closely first to introduce the Special Planning Land Use Management Act. And then secondly, we've been reaching out to the Department of Rural Development because it's the custodian of the Act, and they are the one that introduced and that actually monitors land use management systems and so on. And to say, how do you actually improve the quality of these land use management things? And the law, the CUMA actually requires all municipalities to have land use management schemes. So the trick now moving forward and working together with other departments and municipalities is to say, do we have those land use management schemes? What is the quality of the schemes? To what extent are they designed and developed in a way that actually is in line with our national air policy and other policies and so on? And then in terms of inclusive economic development, Jefferson, I think there's quite a lot that's very clear there as well. I'm going to skip this and maybe move a little faster. Policy Lever 7 talks about empowering empowered active community. This policy lever, Jefferson, is very, very important for us because it talks about how to make sure that the IDF or the coordination of implementation of our national policy is not only done and approved by government, so that communities begin to understand and appreciate what it means for them so they can actually be part of the process. And then policy giver 8 is about effective governance. Essentially here we're talking about integrating intergovernmental planning and so on. And I think what we actually like to highlight is the importance of work on enhancing resilience, climate change mitigation, resource efficiency, and ensure sustainability. We are aware, part of the IGF work, of the importance of climate change, and not only in South Africa, but globally. And our concern is that we need to get to a point where the South African government and our cities start to actually prepare and understand the implications of climate change in our cities and towns. Because that is impacting on migration patterns in people, it's impacting on our agricultural sector, it's impacting on a lot of other economic drivers of the country. And it's hitting hard oftentimes in our cities and towns, because they're the ones that actually have to deal to confront the implications in terms of people of this climate change. Water is another one that actually we need to be concerned about as far as what climate change is doing. So, once again, the IGF talks about how we need to work with our cities and towns to understand the implications of climate change and help them to come up with programs and such. And then the last policy lever talks about sustainable finance. I think here I am going to talk to second bullet point simply because also the work that we're doing there. I think it's about, let's say we started implementing what is called the Integrated Urban Development Grant. And I'll talk about that a bit later, which is linked to the capital expenditure framework. It's a modality that essentially tries to say, let's come up with a way of encouraging our citizens to embrace the spatial vision of the IGF and the NDC and so on, but while we do that, give them some kind of an incentive in order for people to participate in the implementation of the IGF. So I want to zoom in a little bit in the implementation of the IGF, and I want to really spend some time to show that the work that the department is doing to implement the IGF is a two-part to it. One part is a broader coordination mandate, which is the one that says the Department of Cooperative Governance is a custodian of the document, but they're very important partners that we work together to actually implement the IGF. That is the context in which we are approaching the IGF. And this part begins to actually unpack some of the key partners. And these are partners that are essentially of very, very close to government, i.e. National Treasury, City Council Program, Southern and Small Town Generation. But there's other key partners which are, I'm sure you've had through the presentation from Citizens West, La Future, who are fundamental in this process. From the development of the IGF, its conceptualization, in fact, from way back. And so they've been a key partner in the work that we're doing in the IGF. And a lot of others. We've been trying to help and bring on board the private sector and so on. So this presentation doesn't give the certain members that it's just the department alone doing it. We work with the Sustainable Collaboration Network. What has been happening to date, and Chairperson and all honorable members, is that there was an establishment of oversight political committee. The one on your left is called, we had called it the Integrated Urban Development Framework Political Committee, and the other one was called the Technical Committee. The political committee, its role was to provide some kind of oversight on what it is that the department and other partners are doing to implement the idea. What we would typically do by way of an example of Chairperson is we would meet and within that political committee there would be deputy ministers from transport, human settlements, water, finance, rural development, and so on. It was about nine deputy ministers. We would sit, and then we would discuss what is happening in urban space in some places. We would discuss policies in some places. We would discuss challenges that are facing and coordinating our efforts and so on. And these meetings would meet as often as we do at different sites. Then we had a technical structure that was really similar to the political committee, just comprised of officials of the state, something similar. I'm quickly going to zoom into the work that National Treasury has been doing through their Sea Support Program. Just by way of introducing this component, Chairperson, is that there's a slide that I presented earlier, and I'm just going to go back to it, is that what we have done to get this is to ask, there was an agreement that National Treasury would coordinate the work that is being done to implement the IED at the metro. Then the Department of Cooperative Governance would specifically champion the work of implementing the IED at the intermediate city. And then SAUTA would do work that would focus on the north. So moving forward again is now going to the component of work that is very needed. I think this is about 3 slides. Just to give you a sense of what the Sea Support Program Manager has been doing. And it's done quite a lot of work in terms of strengthening policy clarity and consensus. And then it's done some work on building consensus on a measurable outcome framework to look at what's happening in reporting reform. It's done some work on supporting policy and fiscal reform in areas of human settlement and transport and so on. It also looked at some kind of fiscal reforms in terms of borrowing and developing charges and bringing together DFI in the metro space. The focus in the area of work that the Sea Support Program has been doing on the metro. That was the first phase, or Sea Support Program phase one, if you like. This program has entered into phase two, which has started recently. I think it was about January, February this year. And it basically reviewed the first phase and taken some lessons learned from there, and then started to look at how phase two should look like. Essentially, the objective of phase two is to support the development of more complex, connected, oriented cities, which is very much linked to our IDEA vision. It looks at the outcomes that have to do with the metros that are able to implement the strategy to accelerate inclusive economic growth. I know that there's a very comprehensive program that National Treasury through this program is introducing on township economies. And they actually have started to conceptualize it. I think they'll be on the ground in the next couple of months, where they're going to work for the next 3 years with the metros on how to actually literally meaning to what township economies is all about. And then they're looking at policy environment support. Metro to implement such strategies. And this area of work, in terms of its outcome, has to do with climate change work, are looking at what is the impact of climate change on metros and so on. And then there's an area of work that's looking at fiscal incentives and so on. The shift, Jefferson, is really moving from CSC to do with sustaining the program momentum. I think it's about continuity. And then looking at scaling up a direct support to national departments and to strengthen political cohesion. What the city support does, with the way it's structured, Chairperson and honorable members, is that essentially they would have subject matter experts that are supporting national departments, but that are also linked to specific metropolitan municipalities. So moving forward, they actually want to make sure that they focus more on and direct support to these national departments in order to make sure that their policies are in support. So for instance, in human settlements, a lot of colleagues who work around human settlements is receiving direct support from the support program. And then in terms of program priorities, the focus, as I said, is going to be more on urban infrastructure finance. There's a lot of work that they've done here. I know they've been introduced to some degree an infrastructure management system and to the metros, and I think it's called the speaking of the integrated infrastructure management system, CISA, which they actually want to make sure that metros is appreciated and so on. They want to do a lot of work on land and infrastructure, which is linked to IGF and moving forward, and I think I've mentioned that some work that they want to do for it. We now shift in Chairperson and Honourable Members in the work that we are doing in the Intermediate City Support Program. We thought it's important for us to quickly flag the Intermediate City. In total, 39 Intermediate Cities that the Department of Cooperative Governance is targeting. we've grouped them according to provinces, so we can see our provincial spread and the number of municipalities in each province. But we also have to see in the system to the this slide is based, I'll just summarize it pretty carefully. Essentially, the work that we're doing in the Intermediate Student Support Program, it started with obtaining a very, very, very useful partnership with the Peace Development Corporation, who then funded the bulk of the work to the Department of Cooperative Government on how we are going to start rolling out the Intermediate Student Support Program. The funding that we received was administered through the World Bank, and these arrangements that we found according to the department. And essentially what they did is it funded the development of, for logical purposes, to say how do we approach the coordination of the implementation of the IDF in intermediate cities. What we agreed was that we would introduce an implementation methodology, calling it a program design, on how to implement the IDF or to coordinate that in the intermediate cities. We've developed that methodology for intermediate cities, and then we went and tested that methodology in three intermediate cities, which are Polokwane and Mthathiso. As part of the testing process, we established local steering committees in these intermediate cities, which comprise of different units within those initial sites. But typically what we do, for the two panels, we had our deputy minister go in and introduce this program, get a council resolution to say, we as the two municipalities want to participate in the testing phase, and then from there we'll start doing technical work. We establish the local steering committee, and then what we'll do is start doing technical work. And the technical work was essentially split in two parts. The first part was around doing a diagnostic assessment to gain a quick understanding of what are the issues in this municipality in relation to spatial planning, infrastructure delivery management, and essentially public financial framework and government to understand what are the issues. And then the first part of the technical work has to do with coming up with a support plan that will help these municipalities respond to challenges that emanate from the diagnostic assessment. And then through the same funding, the same program, we're going to assign three subject matter experts to help these two municipalities in these three areas. And I think in the two municipalities they spent a minimum of about 6 months working with Polokwane and Mthathiso, helping them to unlock some of the challenges. So I know that in both municipalities we even did what we call spatial visioning exercises, where we would call the officials in the municipality, the councillors, the private sector, members of the community to sit in a room to actually understand what do we mean by spatial vision of the city? What do we actually understand what we want the city to look like? Do we agree with it? And what needs to happen? And then on infrastructure, we're taking some experts that have literally developed very, very useful practical tools like standard operation procedures for procurement and the assistance with the procurement groups and so on. So that process went for 6 months. As part of the learning exercise, Chairperson, what we then did, we asked that we evaluate the testing phase to say, is the methodology that we've developed, as we are applying it, working for us, or do we need to adjust? So we did that piece of work, and then we adjusted our methodology. And then part of the process, this was around luxury education, we started to update. We said, okay, we are not going to wait until our methodology is perfect. I think it's okay for us to start testing. So then we added 7 municipalities to this process, as we very similar. While that was happening, parallel to this process, we started rolling out the Integrated Urban Development Grant. This was introduced in February last year. And that process, I'll explain to you in the next couple of slides, because it's also a very important component of how we can commit to the implementation of the idea. Chairperson, I'm going to ask that you skip this slide and then move to this one. This will be a sense of where we are at in terms of the update. you would remember that I spoke about the diagnostic assessment. As we stand now, we finished diagnostic assessment in all these things.
Have you guys heard about this AGT before? Are you
would like to understand what
very local level. Have you ever heard about them before?
In special training, infrastructure,
on this Pluma.
In
Rosenberg,
what is the report that we put together to give the sense of what happened there. And we didn't take a long time.
I sent you a mail.
It was literally a process that was delivered to
just now.
So that we don't spend months on doing a diagnosis. And the importance for us of this diagnosis is that before we do anything about it, it must be adopted by the municipal council. So council of Scott Guza or Drakenton must sit down and say to us, we agree that these are the issues of the municipality so that we can come up with a support plan that actually they understand the issue. And this is just more or less how the methodology that I've put into the budget has been discussed. So I'm not going to boil the amount of detail. This is basically the, if you would allow me to shift a little bit into the integrated urban development grant. I've spoken about the introduction of the grant last financial year, which is actually in February. What happened is, last year we received about 32 applications. Of the grant from the 39 intermediate municipalities. And then 5 municipalities met the requirement. What we do is introduce the requirement of what is it that you need to do to qualify for the grant of the municipality. And those are the municipalities that are essentially qualified to actually receive the grant, which are Burton, Mohale, Reyes, Kraki, and Fremdash. We actually just closed the second round this financial year. I think we received about eight applications, and I think out of eight, most likely one or two were actually qualified. This is a criteria that these municipalities need to meet in order to qualify for the grant. The criteria is deliberately fit chair, because we believe in working very closely with intermediate species. That we believe, if you think about it, I'm going to try and use a triangle as an illustration. At the base of the triangle, you have a cohort of municipalities that are really better, intermediate city municipalities, in the middle, which is actually a cohort of intermediate city municipalities that are actually doing quite good, which means in terms of their management, they're stable, their audit findings are good, they're spending the money well, and they're reporting to very well in the system. We're actually targeting that cohort of municipalities which are sitting in the cohort of tier 2 and tier 1. If they meet our criteria, then they qualify for the grant. Once they qualify, then they must actually develop this long-term infrastructure plan. And this is just the dramatic illustration of what happened at the Chairperson. The only trend why the numbers would be equally strange is that in the Western Cape, you would notice that there's 18 applications that we received. It is a function, and I think we have only about 2 or 3 ICMs in the Western Cape. What happened is that there are intermediate municipalities who felt whether or not they are included in the state numbers to submit their applications anyway. Just to try and like. But unfortunately, we couldn't adopt them because we had to work within the state numbers, but also manage the uptake because we are also learning on how to introduce the grant. So that's why they are normally there. And these are the municipalities in the which are in the grant at the moment, chairperson. And then I'm moving over to what they need to do once they're qualified. I've spoken about the capital expenditure framework. This is a legal definition. What is nice about introducing this long-term infrastructure plan is that it is introduced as a basis of Section 21 of the Special Planning and Management Act. It talks about the fact that municipalities must develop new CF. But, and I've looked at a few SCFs today. A lot of these SCFs are very poor articulated in municipal SCFs. So we used a section of Pluma and said, we actually want you as an ICM to come up with a proper long-term infrastructure plan. And we're talking about 10, 15, 10, 20 years. And I'll just give you a taste of what is tried to do. I'm not going to do a definition here in the interest of time, but I will talk to this slide. What is it that this long-term infrastructure tries to do? It actually tries to answer these questions here. It try to answer the question that says, what infrastructure does the municipality currently have right now? It tries to answer the question that says, what is the municipality trying to do with the infrastructure, to do with the infrastructure of the next 10 to 20 years? What's going to happen to it? What are the other spheres of government or service providers tend to do with infrastructure and the municipalities? Why? Because we know that often in our municipalities, there's other spheres of government that actually have some plans that actually have an impact on the infrastructure. The CS forces the municipalities to start working with province and national to actually understand what's happening. What does the municipality need? Where does the municipality need infrastructure? This question is very, very important for us too, because where the municipality needs infrastructure must be informed by the spatial development framework. Because the spatial development framework would then target certain places that need to promote certain types of development for certain types of reasons. And as I said, there's a few diagrams that I illustrated that that's just not changed. How much infrastructure does the municipality need and what type, and then how much will it cost? And this is often the most difficult part, because historically, what we find is that the intermediate city municipalities can cost the infrastructure safely only for 2 years. Once you push it to 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, it becomes more difficult, but a lot more tricky, but municipalities are not even used to such things in that way. So we deliberately say to municipalities, start thinking about costing your infrastructure beyond the 2 years, so because you're thinking about infrastructure for a 2 year, because it's also not always wise to do infrastructure is a long term. And then the last few questions, so I'm not going to go through that for this one. So this is just more or less a diagrammatic illustration of how we conceptualize the CS. I'm putting this up here so that you can see the relationship between the CS. What we actually take into account here is the IDP of the municipality, the economic strategy of the municipality, strategy, so on. We prioritize and look at the long-term financial plans of these municipalities. So it is not a program or document that is running in isolation of other plans of the municipalities. We actually link all of these important ones, and then we prioritize them and develop what it looks like. What sets it apart is, if you were to go, Jefferson, to look at the CS of these municipalities that I've mentioned, that are part of the process, you will find that they have identified what we call priority development areas. And those are specifically delimited for intervention areas, i.e. that is where you want to see spatial transformation taking place. So if you were to go to research right now, this CS through the SCF helps us understand what are the spaces that we as government must have targeting in those municipalities so that we can transform the municipality and so on. Now there's a few examples that I have. This is at the Drakenstein one. You have an idea that says in Drakenstein, these are the areas that we're targeting. I'm going to skip this slide here. And then there's other things, examples that I should write, but we can give you more examples if you like to say. And how many places are beginning to give us a government direction on what places should we be targeting? What else are we doing? So that's an over and above all the other partners that I've spoken about. We're working very closely with other partners such as Italy on issues of urban resilience. In fact, we just launched an MOU with them in the last couple of months. And they're doing some work in a couple of municipalities. We're actually doing some work with the GIZ as well, looking at issues of crime prevention, the treatment for developers in front of there. We're doing some work through AFRIS and Urban Safety, where we are part of the Urban Reference Safety Reference Group. I know of late we've been approached by the African Development Bank to do some work with them. We've been approached by the French Development Agency, and all of these partners, what they want is to work with government so that they can support municipalities. What they often say to us is, we go directly to these municipalities, but we don't have a national department at home to do this work. When they discover that we have an idea, they become excited because they say, okay, now we are a national departmental home. And what they bring is expertise, they bring funding, they bring also the very, very valuable opportunities to these municipalities on how to help us actually achieve the IGF. The point here, Jefferson, is that we don't believe that coordinating implementation of the IGF can only be left to the Department of Corporate Affairs. It's actually everybody that actually must be part of it. And that's why we work very closely with the partners. Jefferson, now in terms of the way forward, it just illustrates a little bit what is likely to happen. And I just want to focus on these next couple of slides. This is looking to the work that we're doing in the Department on the District Coordination Model. I'm sure we will all remember that the cabinet, and there was actually a cabinet resolution on the District Coordination Model, besides talking to that. And the intention here with this next slide is to say, while we have the national event policy, we need to be cognizant and responsive and see how it can enhance some of the introduction of the district-based coordination model. So we'll be moving forward, working through the process of the district coordination model to see how we can mainstream the work that we're doing in the IUGS in that model. For example, when we talk about the development of the one plan, we want to see how we can use some of the lessons and the knowledge and the experience we've learned in this city to inform the development of the one plan for the district. A very practical example for us is if we go into a district where we have an ICM that has a long-term infrastructure plan, we can use lessons from that to actually inform what this one plan would look like, because that means we will have some issues already. This is Morris, a similar slide share, and I'm almost finished. And this is just maybe just to showcase how we are embracing the district coordination modeling and the idea. And this is developing work. It's certainly to shape it a bit better, Jefferson, and to make sure that the linkage between the work on the IGF and the ICM is much more coherent and better. Jefferson, thanks very much, and honorable members. I think I'm done. Thank you.
I think the issues we have been presented are mental that we need to be watching this presentation and so that we don't do anything personally.